Welcome to Washington Today for Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Here are some of today's headlines. A former Facebook data scientist told the Senate Commerce Committee that the social network's products harm children and fuel polarization in the U.S., adding that Facebook executives refuse to change because they value profits over safety. And she said responsibility for that lies right at the top with Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. More on this story in a moment with John Swartz of MarketWatch. The Biden administration reversed a ban on abortion referrals by family planning clinics, lifting a Trump-era restriction. This as political and legal battles over abortion grow from Texas to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Department of Health and Human Services said Monday its new regulation will restore the federal family planning program to the way it ran under the Obama administration. That's when clinics were able to refer women seeking abortions to a provider. And it's the first time in 25 years that former President Donald Trump hasn't made the annual Forbes 400 list. Forbes reports that while the former president, who ranked number 339 in 2020, is worth an estimated $2.5 billion, he is, quote, down $600 million since the start of the pandemic. Meanwhile, for the fourth year in a row, Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, topped the list with an estimated net wealth of $201 billion. First, we begin on Capitol Hill. Profits over people. That was the message from a Facebook whistleblower. Frances Haugen testified before the Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Consumer Protection, Product Safety, and Data Security. She testified about protecting children online with privacy regulations and laws. Here's a portion of her opening statement.
I'm here today because I believe Facebook's products harm children, stoke division, and weaken our democracy. The company's leadership knows how to make Facebook and Instagram safer, but won't make the necessary changes because they have put their astronomical profits before people. Congressional action is needed. They won't solve this crisis without your help. Yesterday, we saw Facebook get taken off the internet. I don't know why it went down, but I know that for more than 5 hours, Facebook wasn't used to deepen divides, destabilize democracies, and make young girls and women feel bad about their bodies. It also means that millions of small businesses weren't able to reach potential customers, and countless photos of new babies weren't joyously celebrated by family and friends around the world. I believe in the potential of Facebook. We can have social media we enjoy that connects us without tearing apart our democracy, putting our children in danger, and sowing ethnic violence around the world. We can do better. I have worked as a product manager at large tech companies since 2006, including Google, Pinterest, Yelp, and Facebook. My job has largely focused on algorithmic products like Google Plus Search and recommendation systems like the one that powers the Facebook news feed. Having worked on four different types of social networks, I understand how complex and nuanced these problems are. However, the choices being made inside of Facebook are disastrous for our children, for our public safety, for our privacy, and for our democracy. And that is why we must demand Facebook make changes. During my time at Facebook, first working as the lead product manager for civic misinformation and later on counter-espionage, I saw Facebook repeatedly encounter conflicts between its own profits and our safety. Facebook consistently resolved these conflicts in favor of its own profits. The result has been more division, more harm, more lies, more threats, and more combat. In some cases, this dangerous online talk has led to actual violence that harms and even kills people. This is not simply a matter of certain social media users being angry or unstable, or about one side being radicalized against the other. It is about Facebook choosing to grow at all costs, becoming an almost trillion-dollar company by buying its profits with our safety.
Ms. Haugen's testimony went beyond calling out Facebook's impact on young users. This is the second in a series of hearings the committee has held since Frances Haugen leaked internal documents to the Wall Street Journal last month. In fact, TheHill.com reporting that Ms. Haugen's appearance is drawing more attention to the issues and concerns that Facebook critics have long been raising. Here's Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, questioning Haugen.
Last Thursday, my colleagues and I asked Ms. Davis, who was representing Facebook, about how the decision would be made whether to pause permanently Instagram for kids. And she said, quote, "There's no one person who makes a decision like that. We think about it, that collaboratively." It's as though she couldn't mention Mark Zuckerberg's name. Isn't he the one who will be making this decision from your experience in the company?
Mark holds a very unique role in the tech industry in that he holds over 55% of all the voting shares for Facebook. There are no similarly powerful companies that are as unilaterally controlled. And in the end, the buck stops with Mark. There is no one currently holding Mark accountable but himself.
And Mark Zuckerberg, in effect, is the algorithm designer in chief, correct?
I received an MBA from Harvard, and they emphasized to us that we are responsible for the organizations that we build. Mark has built an organization that is very metrics-driven. It is intended to be flat. There is no unilateral responsibility. The metrics make the decision. Unfortunately, that itself is a decision. And in the end, if he is the CEO and the chairman of Facebook, he is responsible for those decisions.
The buck stops with him.
The buck stops with him.
That's Senator Richard Blumenthal. He is also the chair of the Commerce Subcommittee on Consumer Protection, Product Safety, and Data Security. In response to questioning from Minnesota Democrat Senator Amy Klobuchar, Frances Haugen testified that Facebook's actions with regard to the 2020 election and the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Last thing I'll ask is, we've seen this same kind of content in the political world. You brought up other countries and what's been happening there. On 60 Minutes, you said that Facebook implemented safeguards to reduce misinformation ahead of the 2020 election, but turned off those safeguards right after the election. And you know that the insurrection occurred January 6th. Do you think that Facebook turned off the safeguards because they were costing the company money, because it was reducing profits?
Facebook has been emphasizing a false choice. They've said the safeguards that were in place before the election implicated free speech. The choices that were happening on the platform were really about how reactive and twitchy was the platform, right? Like, how viral was the platform? And Facebook changed those safety defaults in the run-up to the election because they knew they were dangerous. And because they wanted that growth back, they wanted the acceleration of the platform back after the election, they returned to their original defaults. And the fact that they had to break the glass on January 6th and turn them back on, I think that's deeply problematic.
Agree. Thank you very much for your bravery in coming forward.
Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota. Meanwhile, South Dakota Republican Senator John Thune asked Haugen about measures to protect users online. Here's that exchange.
So let me, Ms. Haugen, just ask you, we've learned from the information that you provided that Facebook conducts what's called engagement-based ranking, which you've described as very dangerous. Could you talk more about why engagement-based ranking is dangerous, and do you think Congress should seek to pass legislation like the Filter Bubble Transparency Act that would give users the ability to avoid engagement-based ranking altogether?
Facebook is going to say, you don't want to give up engagement-based ranking. You're not going to like Facebook as much if we're not picking out the content for you. That's just not true. There are a lot of, Facebook likes to present things as false choices, like you have to choose between having lots of spam. Like, let's say, imagine we ordered our feeds by time, like on iMessage or on, there are other forms of social media that are chronologically based. They're going to say, you're going to get spammed, like you're not going to enjoy your feed. The reality is that those experiences have a lot of permutations. There are ways that we can make those experiences where computers don't regulate what we see. We together socially regulate what we see. But they don't want us to have that conversation because Facebook knows that when they pick out the content that we focus on using computers, we spend more time on their platform, they make more money. The dangers of engagement-based ranking are that Facebook knows that content that elicits an extreme reaction from you is more likely to get a click, a comment, or reshare. And it's interesting because those clicks and comments and reshares aren't even necessarily for your benefit It's because they know that other people will produce more content if they get the likes and comments and reshares. They prioritize content in your feed so that you will give little hits of dopamine to your friends so they will create more content. And they have run experiments on people, producer-side experiments, where they have confirmed this.
That was Facebook whistleblower Frances Haugen responding to questions from South Dakota Republican Senator John Thune before the Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Consumer Protection, Product Safety, and Data Security. Here on the phone with us, MarketWatch senior reporter John Swartz reporting with this headline at MarketWatch.com. Facebook's very, very bad day. Services go dark and stock plunges in wake of whistleblower revelations. Were there any surprises with the content of Ms. Haugen's testimony today at today's hearing?
There really weren't. What she has said, we've heard for years now. Since the Cambridge Analytica breach of a couple of years ago, we've heard consistently from whistleblowers like herself, including former executives, who pointed out that Facebook knew of things that had gone awry, but didn't address them well enough because they didn't want to disrupt the profit-making machine that is their advertising and the number of people that they draw, including a ton of people who are underage and who shouldn't be on Facebook in the first place.
You know, big tech has been a major target on both sides of the aisle on Capitol Hill. How impactful was Frances Haugen's testimony today?
I think it was incredibly significant. So three members of the subcommittee of today's hearing are members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, including the chair, Amy Klobuchar, also Blumenthal and Blackburn. And they all have legislation in one form or another to address antitrust issues in big tech. So what is happening is there's this bipartisan wave of support anywhere from Klobuchar and Blumenthal to Blackburn and Ted Cruz. They're all in on making changes that they think are, for different reasons, of course, but they're all in on addressing what's going on with big tech because there's a huge wave, not just of bipartisan support, but public sentiment that something has to be done. And I think the segment on 60 Minutes with Frances Haugen may have been one of the more devastating turns against Facebook after years of kind of no movement on activism towards their correcting mistakes.
Well, and Congress has a lot to deal with these laws with regard to how to rein in big tech with the laws that are already on the books.
You know, this has always been the problem. This happened today. So there's a classic example of online legislation. There's been talk of changing or updating online protections for kids, which hasn't really been changed since 1998. It was actually Ed Markey who's on the same committee. He's worked on a sequel for years to the COPPA Act, and nothing has changed. So one thing that Facebook points out, and one thing I will give them their props for, is that you need to create a standard rules for the Internet. It's been 25 years since significant rules for the Internet have been updated. So the onus should probably be on Congress. Now, that kind of links to the antitrust argument because the antitrust laws are decades old and they don't really apply to the digital economy or companies specifically like Amazon and the Apple Store or the Google Store. So we have this huge disconnect between what the companies are doing without any specific laws, and then you have the complaints from the regulators and the lawmakers to affect change. And until they do, the courts can't interpret what the companies are doing. So a company like Apple may engage in what you think is antitrust behavior in the Epic case, but they're not called an antitrust company by the federal judge because she can't go that far given what the current laws are. So we have this whole conundrum that's been going on for years, and it's kind of finally gaining some sort of traction where perhaps given all the false steps in the bad headlines for Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Google, whomever, maybe that might possibly finally affect change. But it's been going on for years, though.
And in that vein, in a September 30th hearing with Facebook's global safety director, Antigone Davis, John Schwartz, you wrote in your article at marketwatch.com that Senator Richard Blumenthal stated that Facebook has taken a page from Big Tobacco's playbook with relation to hiding critical research on addiction. So what, if any, action do experts and politicos predict will come of big tech in general in light of these new revelations?
Well, until, you know, I hate to say it, but until they change the laws, they can't affect change. And I think what Facebook does and what they have been doing for the last couple of years, whether it's Mark Zuckerberg, Sheryl Sandberg, Antigone Davis, whomever, they go up before the congressional members, they deflect, they offer vague excuses, they downplay even their own research, which Davis did. She said their internal research was not a bombshell, and she, in a sense, downplayed the negative impact Instagram has on teenage girls. So until you actively can force them to change, Facebook is not going to change. Why would they? They're worth almost $1 trillion. They're one of the great success stories in American business history. Mark Zuckerberg's a multi-billionaire. The stock was up today despite the hearing. So in a sense, you have this kind of same kind of deja vu exercise in futility feeling, where until advertisers leave, by the way, and they're very happy with the results they get on Facebook, they're not leaving. Neither are people, actually. It continues to grow 7% year over year in terms of monthly active users. They've got almost 3 billion. Think about that. That's 10 times as large as what Twitter has. So they're fabulously successful, and they continue to push the envelope because they know there are no real repercussions they face except for a congressional grilling. They're not going to lose in court. The FTC is going after them. The FTC had to revise their lawsuit against Facebook because they couldn't make a strong enough case about its market dominance. I mean, what's the motive for Facebook to change at all? I mean, they're more profitable than ever. They're larger than ever. They're worth more than ever. And they've got more happy customers in terms of advertisers. So we can all complain as much as we want, but this behemoth just keeps growing and growing.
To read more on the situation with Facebook and big tech, follow John Schwartz at marketwatch.com. Thank you so much for helping us make sense of it all.
Thanks so much for having me.
Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today. Everything is safe this hour after U.S. Capitol Police say they extracted a man from an SUV parked in front of the Supreme Court building and placed him in custody. CNBC reporting that the suspect, identified as 55-year-old Dale Melvin of Kimball, Michigan, was arrested for failure to obey and assault on a police officer. The incident did not disrupt the court proceedings, as the heavy police presence, which included dozens of officers and multiple police dogs, came on the second day of the Supreme Court's new term. Meanwhile, President Biden is in Michigan to make a case for his infrastructure and spending bills. Mr. Biden was visiting an operating engineer's training facility in Howell. President Biden stressed that Congress should pass both the infrastructure bill and the Democrats' reconciliation bill in order to compete with China. Here's a portion of his remarks.
Now, I've been clear that China uses unfair coercive practices to get ahead in their competitors, but that's not the whole of the story. They also invest in themselves. In recent years, China has spent around 3 times as much on infrastructure as a share of their economy than we have. 3 times. And they're not slowing down. Yesterday, my U.S. trade representative delivered an important speech on our competition with China. She pointed out that China made a major investment in steel plants beginning about 20 years ago. In the last 20 years, half of American steel companies have been shuttered. We went from 100 U.S. steel companies to 51, and employment in American steel industry dropped by 40% since the year 2000. China now produces more steel in 1 month than America does in an entire year. You can see it in the sector after sector. Other countries are speeding up and America's falling behind. We've got to reset the pace again. We've got to set a different pace. For example, here in Michigan, we need to make sure that American auto workers lead the world in electric vehicles. And some of you came to the White House when I had the chairman of the board of General Motors, Chrysler, and, and General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford. You know, and what have they decided to do? They decided they're going to lead the world and they're going to build more of the electric vehicles than any other country. But guess what? China's not waiting around. They manufacture more than twice as many electric vehicles as we have over the last decade. They control more than 75% of the battery market. And they're poised to invest another $14 billion in charging capacity now in their country.
President Biden also touted investments in education, as well as highlighting union jobs to create jobs from fixing roads to building electric vehicle charging stations. Before his trip to Michigan, the president met with nearly a dozen vulnerable House Democrats as he and party leaders raced to pass a $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill and an additional $3.5 trillion spending bill before the end of the month. Back on Capitol Hill, Republicans continue to discuss spending and the debt ceiling. Here's Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
You talk about the debt ceiling. Are we to believe that your telephone is not wrong from investors in New York, Wall Street, people concerned about your position on this, that that is not happening as we get closer to this 18th deadline?
Well, we're all hearing about the need to do this. The only issue is who does it. It's not in dispute that the debt ceiling needs to be addressed. The only issue is who does it. And I've been over this repeatedly with you all and others since July.
So they've called you but have they called you to implore the banking industry, Wall Street investors?
I'm sure we've heard from everybody, and I'm sure the Democrats have as well.
Have you heard from President Biden? He said
I've not heard from the president. We had an exchange of pleasantries yesterday.
Democrats. You agree with Democrats, they agree with you, that the debt ceiling needs to be raised, and they're now saying they're willing to do it with Democratic votes alone. What possible difference does it make which mechanism they use to do it, whether it be by reconciliation or by Republicans just not filibustering them doing it with their 50 votes?
Look, they said they're perfectly prepared to do the job themselves. The easiest way to do that is through the reconciliation process. As I've pointed out, for 2 months.
How is that easier than Republicans just not filibustering it and then passing it with 50 votes?
That would require getting consent from every single Republican to lower the threshold to 51.
Do you not have the power to do that?
I can't imagine that would happen. And the reason that wouldn't happen is we've been pointing out for 2 months how they ought to do it. And that's the way to get the job done.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell speaking to reporters. Also speaking to reporters on negotiations with the spending bills is Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The give and take on reconciliation.
You've got to speak out a little.
I said, just back to your response on the give and take on reconciliation, where do you think Democrats can give a little bit more to get to that $2 trillion?
I'm not going to negotiate in public. We had a very good meeting, Speaker Pelosi, myself, the president's people last night. We began getting into the nitty-gritty of how we get this done, and we are going to get it done. You know, we want to get all of it done by the 31st of October, and we're making good progress. I think Democrats of all different, the progressive folks, the more moderate folks, all realize there's going to have to be give on every side to get this done, and I think we do. Yes.
Are all 50 Democrats opposed to using reconciliation for the debt limit?
Reconciliation is a drawn-out, convoluted, and risky process with default and downgrade hovering over us. The best way to do it is the way we said. That's what we're telling Leader McConnell and the American people we need to do. Yes. CNN. Tall CNN back there.
Are you absolutely ruling out reconciliation?
The best.
Wait, sir, if the vote goes down tomorrow, are you still absolutely ruling out reconciliation?
As I said, reconciliation is a drawn-out, convoluted process. We've shown the best way to go. We are moving forward in that direction.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. The Department of Justice is launching a new inquiry into the FBI's handling of allegations against former USA Gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar. The DOJ is specifically reviewing the department's decision not to charge agents who mishandled the investigation. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco confirmed the new probe during a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. When she was asked to respond to criticism the DOJ has received for declining to prosecute the agents. Now, this announcement comes roughly 1 month after the Judiciary panel heard testimony from star U.S. gymnasts about the way the FBI disregarded allegations of abuse following a bombshell report from the DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz. At one point, Republican Texas Senator John Cornyn asked Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco to respond to criticism from a few of the gymnasts who survived Nassar's abuse.
Let me just ask you to respond to a statement that was reported in The Hill. This is by one of the witnesses there, former U.S. Olympic gymnast Allie Raisman. She attended a news conference that Senator Blumenthal and Senator Grassley held. And as you know, Senator Blumenthal, Senator Feinstein had both written a letter to you and the Attorney General asking serious questions, asking for you to appear at the hearing that we held 3 weeks ago. But Ms. Raisman, one of the victims of repeated sexual assault by the Olympic team doctor, said the message by them not showing up sends that child abuse doesn't matter. She's talking about the Department of Justice, talking about you. I think it's completely shocking and disturbing that they didn't think it was important. What's your response?
Senator, I think that the women who came and testified here last month are exceptionally brave. Their voices were powerful.
They're talking about you not showing up. And that was essentially a disrespectful act, which did not view the allegations that they have made against Mr. Nassar as sufficiently significant for the Department of Justice to actually show up for the hearing.
I'm deeply and profoundly sorry for the fact that the victims and courageous survivors, both the women who testified last month and the scores of other survivors of Larry Nassar did not receive.
Why didn't you or the Attorney General show up at the hearing?
Senator, I think the committee, and I thank the committee for its work, was able to hear from Director Ray and the Inspector General.
Don't you know you demonstrated profound disrespect for these victims of sexual assault by your refusal to respond to Senator Blumenthal, Senator Feinstein's letter, or to even show and express your personal apology as the public official responsible for supervising the FBI at the Department of Justice? Don't you think you showed them disrespect by refusal to show?
I mean, no disrespect, Senator, and I am here to answer whatever questions the committee has with regard to the steps the department is taking to ensure that the failures, the inexcusable failures, fundamental failures, do not happen again. I welcome the committee's questions here today on that subject.
Well, you're about 3 weeks too late by my count.
Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas. In response to that line of questioning, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, the Democrat from Rhode Island, had this exchange with Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco.
We had another exceptionally brave and powerful witness with allegations of sexual assault in this committee before the Olympic athletes, and that was Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. In response to that testimony, the Republicans hired a prosecutor to try to punch holes in her testimony. And when that failed, it appears that the FBI tanked the background investigation. Just for starters, is there any reason that sexual assault allegations should be taken less seriously in the context of a background investigation than in the context of a criminal investigation?
Sexual assault allegations should always be taken seriously, Senator.
And let me thank you for the trickle of information that has begun to flow about the FBI's conduct in that matter. As you know, Director Wray maintained a complete stonewall on information about that investigation during the Trump administration, while at the same time maintaining a fast lane for FBI information related to the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. Why there should be two different gates at the FBI for information related to these two investigations is something that we'd like to try to understand further, and I hope you'll continue to cooperate in extracting from the FBI the information that we need to understand what took place. Will you?
We will, Senator, and I'm pleased that the FBI has responded to, I think, your most recent letter on this matter, has offered a briefing on the matter, and you have my commitment. We will continue to make sure that we do our very best to answer your questions.
Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island. And that was Lisa Monaco, Deputy Attorney General, responding to his questions. Meanwhile, in the Senate chamber, members are debating voting rights again. This time, Vermont Democrat Senator Patrick Leahy, author and chief sponsor of the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, reintroduced a modified version of the bill. A Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on Senator Leahy's newly reintroduced John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act will be held tomorrow, that's Wednesday, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern. You can hear live coverage of tomorrow's hearing on C-SPAN Radio and on the C-SPAN Now app. Thanks for joining us for Washington Today. A reminder that all of our coverage is online anytime at cspan.org. And if you missed any of this program, you can find it now on the C-SPAN Now app or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington delivered right to your inbox, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter, word for word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Nkoyo Iyamba. Thanks for listening today to Washington Today.